Hi, I'm Kirsty Rice, and I am totally crap at podcast introductions, but I'm reasonably good at expat life and travelling with kids. This is my friend Nikki Moffat. Hi. We're the two fat expats, perhaps a little bit literally or maybe even metaphorically, but mostly because we believe that expat life should be lived large. We want you to fill it up to the brim until it's overflowing. Nikki and I are serial expats.
Yep, I've lived in four countries over the last 14 years, which has meant I've climbed Kilian, Africa, played tennis in the deep American South, surfed my way around Durban while mastering dumplings and banking in Hong Kong. I can speak taxi Cantonese, I can add some hard R's when needed, and I'm currently touching up my high school German, and I do have a dirndl in my wardrobe.
I've lived in seven countries over the past 17 years and have managed to have a few children along the way. Four kids, four different countries, and I haven't broken one of them yet. I still can't pack a suitcase properly, but a few career highlights have been protests in Jakarta, backyard monkeys in KL, and making my way around the funky cold Medina in Libya. There's been bumps and hurdles in my expat life with chemo in Qatar and boarding school for big kids, but we've made it. I've finally found an online gig that allows me to travel. It only took me about 12 years. Easy, really.
And that's why we're here. Each week we talk about expat life and try to find solutions to expat questions. Now, let's get on with the show.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I am fine, thank you, Kirsty. Right, in a long time, no talk.
I know. I guess, I took off to Australia. I think I took off just after we last spoke, right?
Yes, I think it was quite soon after.
And then, of course, I got home because my reason for going home was I had a couple of things I wanted to sort out with my girls, and the house was sort of starting to move along, but there were just a few decisions that I had tried to do via email and over the phone, and my husband was at the same point, and he kind of just looked at me one day and said, do you think maybe this would be easier if you were actually standing at the house doing this? And it was like, yeah. Do you know, you're trying to explain the fence and the retaining wall and the where the shed needs to go and all that sort of stuff, and there comes a point where you really need to be standing right there and then. And I also had a thing with my daughter where she was having to head off to all these things on her own, and it just sort of felt a little bit cruel not to be there to hold her hand through the process. So I got on a plane and I left, and I didn't come back for a long time.
You extended a couple of times.
Yes. At one point, because we kind of extended because, you know, the Tylers were going to finish something and we just wanted to go to one more softball game so that she could meet some people to get comfortable, and we just wanted to do this and we just wanted to do that. And then at one stage my husband said, Kirsty, at what stage do I just say, see at Christmas? Anyway, it's that whole expat thing, Nikki, isn't it? You know, you want to be in so many places at once, and you know, you never seem to be quite in the right one. And I had a situation where a girlfriend of mine, her mother died, and her mother was an incredibly special woman in the hometown that I grew up in. She was a long time teacher, English teacher, and had a huge impact on so many people's lives. And she passed away when I was home, and I was going to miss her funeral by just a few days, and it just didn't feel right either. Do you know, I just didn't sit properly. And anyway, so
you extended.
Yeah, I extended and yes, felt incredibly blessed, really, hashtag blessed, to be there.
That's so true, because there are so many times that you miss, particularly funerals of friends or family, friends or their parents that you would regularly go to if you lived, you know, where you lived in your home country, whichever, in inverted commas. And so it was incredible. Yeah, I see the hashtag blessed. And yeah, I agree. I agree. Because, you know, that's something that you would have desperately loved to do, and you would have sent, you know, messages and been there for your friend emotionally, but you were able to be there physically as well. So that's a really cool thing.
And, you know, Nikki, we are of an age now to make us sound incredibly old, but we are in that middle part of our lives where our friends' parents are passing away. And, you know, you've lost your mother, Nikki. You lost her way too young. But there is something about a funeral and being at a friend's parents' funeral where you gather sort of this deep insight into your friend, and so many things make sense, and you can be a great friend by being there. You know, my mother's mother died when she was six. My mother was 16, and my mother always talks about how the friends of hers that came on the day meant such a big thing to her, because it was so incredibly brave at their age to say, I'm going to go to, you know, Maxine's mother's funeral, because it was a devastating thing. And I've had three friends whose parents have died this year, and, you know, in my part, not their part, I was lucky to be at home, you know, in that, because it was over that summer break where it happened. And I did think, God, if I hadn't have been here, if I hadn't heard those words or seen that thing or been there to carry the flowers out of the church to the car, do you know, just simple things that you do for your friends. And it really, I have to say, it really made Greg and I question our expat existence for a moment there of, you know, at people's funerals, you talk about community and people talk about the role you play in a community. And it's hard to have that same level existence in the expat world, because you've got so many people churning in and churning out of, you know, having that impact. If this conversation's going a whole different way than I thought it would go, but do you know what I mean? It really did make me.
I do know what you mean. And it's very difficult. I have somebody I know whose husband passed away this year, and he was an expat for many years. They lived in Hong Kong for a long time. And, you know, not everyone from Hong Kong could go to the UK for his funeral. So, but in Hong Kong, they gathered and they did their thing, and then they had a memorial cricket match more recently that she and her family were able to travel to attend. So, like, I think it's different. I hear what you're saying. There can't be hundreds of people physically there at the immediate time.
Yes.
But there's still an impact in expat communities, because people do, they treasure the relationships and they become very close, and they do actually sort of make an effort to do something in that kind of situation.
Yeah, and, you know, you've raised, that's a brilliant point, is that, okay, so maybe we have to have expat funerals, in that, okay, maybe your funeral or your expat parents' funeral isn't going to be the traditional community church or community hall where everybody talks about, you know, that role. Maybe it's going to be that there is a memorial cricket match, or there is a candle lit in one country where you lived and a candle lit in another, and there will be small people that, you know, or people that gather.
Yeah, the groups of people that gather everywhere. All right, well, we move on to our hot topic of the week.
Yes.
So this week, well, this was a topic that we brought up a few weeks ago before you went to Australia, Kirsty, because this was the situation that you were in or were feeling at the time. So it was about what to do before you go. So do you want to talk about a little bit about how that came about and what the possible outcome is?
So, yeah, so I had posted back on the 29th of October, one last thing before I go. And the post said, there's a possibility that my husband will be made redundant in the next month. We've known this for a year, but D-Day is fast approaching. We've spoken to the kids, got ourselves in the right headspace, and considered what we'd pack, etc. Every now and then I wonder if I should be doing something more, like, is there something I'm going to regret when I find myself on a plane home? Is it it is the weirdest feeling. It's like standing at the checkout knowing there's something missing from the shopping list. So tell me, if your expat life was about to finish, is there something you'd do before it was all over, apart from save as much money as possible? So there were lots of comments, but the top comment was from Jane Crompton, who said, as I came towards the end of 20 years overseas, I'm thinking more about what to renew in my homeland, old friends, new acquaintances, rather than what I'm leaving behind. There will always be somewhere you wish you'd been seen, photographed, etc., but start looking forwards, not backwards. Embrace your new adventure. Good luck. Which is just such a positive post, right? Because repatriation is never the most positive discussion. Hers was a lovely looking forward comment. But yes, Nikki, so just touching on that before we go in the comments is, you know, this week we did find out that we are staying. My husband does have a job. He's kept his job. It's been all sorts of emotion because there's obviously people that didn't keep their jobs and, you know, to people that live on our street and people with young children and people with children who were incredibly close to our children. And it's hard. It's hard to hear and hard to see and hard to celebrate. But if I can say, one of the biggest learnings I think for us has been you often entertain the idea of leaving or stopping or returning home. And then when somebody is perhaps going to take it away from you, your whole feeling can change about it. It's like, hang on.
You've taken the choice away.
I was going to decide this, not you. And so it really did make us have to think about, well, what are we going to do? Because all of a sudden your husband's thinking, well, do I consider jobs in Australia or do I start looking for jobs elsewhere? Oh, and here comes the mosque for everyone who's listening. So, you know, it was an incredibly tumultuous time, I guess. And we do, like, you do think, oh, well, I would think about quickly getting that last bit of travel in or quickly whizzing off to get rugs and lamps and whatever. But the truth is, I think you become a little bit, what happened to us was we became a little bit paralyzed by it all.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. So you think there are all these great things that you'd like to do. And that's what partly the podcast is about, is that you can't leave it all to the end. You've got to try and do it while it's happening, because if you try and leave something to the end, it's not going to work. It's like on the busiest day you've ever had,
yes,
something will go wrong, but something happens that necessitates a whole lot of other things, like the day I had 2 days ago. And then then you get caught up in this thing and you think, well, all these 10 things I've got, I actually could have done this before, but now I don't have time to do all the things, yes, I have to do, plus all the extra stuff that's just come up. So yeah, it's nice to think about and nice to talk about, but the actual action of doing it is tough.
Yeah, you're bang on. That's exactly what this podcast is about, is make sure you've done it all so that when it finishes, there are no regrets. Now, Louise said, it's so strange leaving and the uncertainty of when being out of your control too. Before we left each location we were in, we did a mad dash to visit the places we hadn't got around to and the restaurants we hadn't been to. I wanted no regrets. 5 days before we left Singapore, I went to Vietnam as I hadn't been and knew that we were going to America and it would be my only chance. Clever Louise. I'm glad I did. I wish I'd shopped in Jakarta more, as I bored everyone to tears about how lovely the furniture was and how cheap it was. Maybe should have had more massages, although not sure when that would have been possible. When you describe Doha to your Aussie pals, what are the bits that make you smile? Do more of them before you leave. No matter how prepared you think you are, a little piece of your heart is left in each country, but you're taking all your wonderful memories with you. So I love that. Think about when you describe Doha to your Aussie pals, what are the bits that make you smile? Do more of that. That's perfect.
Yeah. That's great advice, isn't it?
very wise person, Louise. I don't think Louise will mind me saying that it was Louise who lost her husband in Florida when they were in between two sort of expat locations. So she very, very wise at looking back, you know, and thinking about what's important. So, yeah, that was brilliant advice.
Kareth said, I expatriated 10 years ago to Perth, a place I'd left some 18 years before. I left with a suitcase and came home with a husband, two kids and a container of stuff.
Some would call that a win, some would not.
That's right. What did you do in the last 18 years? Things I wish I'd done, being more positive about our new home, connected with old friends earlier to help out with making connection, accepting that education and health services were not worse, they were just different. Hello. I am finally very happy in our new home and know it was the right move for us, but boy, was it hard and I didn't expect it to be.
Oh.
And isn't that the story of so many people's repatriations?
Yes, yes, yes. Kelly says, eat all the things, do all the things, buy all the things. All the stuff that you thought you would one day, because it's now one day. And take a photo of your kitchen. She said this was your advice at the Sydney 4 Big Fat Expat Meetup. And it was, because I'm still cross that I don't have enough photos of some of the houses that I've lived in along the way, do you know, to jog those memories. You know, it's that photo you see when you're bathing your baby, you know, in the sink somewhere, and you go, oh my God, you know, that home is so in my heart that it should be there as a memory all the time. Yes.
Yes. Anne suggested to take photos. So to go around, we went around our neighborhood to take pictures of our favorite people, our vet, the post office guy, the bookstore ladies, the grocery checkout guy, the butcher, as a way of saying so long and thanking them for being so nice to us. It was fun and no one objected to having their photo taken. Well, I can guess that Anne was not in Germany, because the law is against that here. But having said that, I also found a blog article about photos you need to take before you leave your expat assignment, and I'll put that link in the show notes.
But it was
a similar kind of thing. Yeah,
yes.
So it was a list of photos that said, you know, inside your house, routine stops, which Anne's mentioned, schools, your families, you know, people that work with your family, your best friends, and then things like photos, the place you realized you were going to make it. So this is the photo to capture, you know, the after the rough patch.
Yes.
So, you know, when you first move to a place and it can be sweetness and light for a minute before you sort of plunge a little bit into a little bit of darkness before we come out the other side. So to know that place you were when you thought, God, it's going to be all right, I'm going to make
it. Yes, that is brilliant.
Okay, so there's a great list there, and I'll put it in the show notes of lots of different ideas of photos to take.
I also loved Mariam, because she said, make short videos of your kids asking them to talk about why they loved living in Doha or what they will miss. Years from now, they'll still be able to see it and appreciate their expat lives in that very moment. And that is kind of one of the reasons why I had the blog and love the blog, because I know that while my kids aren't going to go back and refer to it now, nothing could be more eye-rolling or embarrassing, but maybe, you know, in their 30s or 40s or whatever, they will look back and have those little snippets of their Doha life and things may jig or whatever. But I've also got videos that I took of my kids just before we left Houston, and I have not looked at them in the whole time I've been here, but I interviewed them those nights. So I'm busting, you know, to one day look back at those.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Because I didn't interview my kids, but I've got a couple of videos of them speaking, and I love it because they have different accents.
Yes.
So they've had different accents in every country they've been in. So I'm going to love, like, at the 21st or something, cranking them out. And here's a video of, you know.
Now, just on that, Nikki, I also had said, I'd asked in the Two Fat Expats group about people's, what their goals were money-wise, and I think this will be a podcast in the future, because I want to talk a lot more about money in the future, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot this year, and I am very keen to sort of go into it more coming up next year, but I'll talk about more of that when we come back next year. But Jennifer had said that they'd sold their house when they started their expat journey, and they set off with the goals to, one, see more of the world, two, spend more time as a family, because she'd left her job as an expat to then become a stay-at-home mum as a – sorry, let me start that again. She left her job – before, so that when she became an expat, she could be a stay-at-home mum. Okay. So they wanted to save money, and their save money goal was the most challenging, as they like to travel often. And now they've got kids in expat schools, and they can see how the school fees are absolutely exorbitant. But she said by the time they repatriate, they'd love to be able to buy a home in cash. And because I just thought that was interesting too, is that if you're thinking your expat gig is nearly going to be up, and that was where my husband and I were, you know, only a couple of weeks ago, is you do start very much to start to look at the monetary side of things, and if you have stuck to your goals, and or if they've changed, you know, like did something alter in that journey, and are you going to get home and be disappointed with the way you spent your money, other than, you know, and it goes both ways. Like, are you going to be disappointed that you focused so much on saving that you didn't do and live the life you could have? Or are you going to be disappointed that you spent so much time at brunch and shopping that you've come home no better off financially?
Yeah, there's whole sort of intricacies around that as well, because, you know, the goal might be that, you know, you got to spend those years. Maybe your goal was to be a stay-at-home mum, and in the country you were living in, you couldn't do that, but being an expat enabled you to do that. So that was part of sort of a major part of your goal, because you would have had to work, and so it would be a different situation. So, yeah, there's all sorts of different financial goals that don't necessarily sort of that have different outcomes in the end. But, yes, very interesting times
ahead. Yeah. Anyway, I thought they were all great. It was incredibly good for me to look back on and think of. And interestingly, I did not go and buy one rug, and I did not go and buy one lamp. and just yesterday we found out that we are allowed to have, through different things of kids moving and whatever, we're going to have excess baggage allowance to take back with us this Christmas. And Greg said, oh, can you think of anything that you want to take back from Doha to Australia with 20 kilos of excess baggage? And I was straight back there again. I can't think of anything. It's terrible. I can't think of what I want to take back. You know, I with a brand new house, I can't see the need for a particular style of rug from here, from the Middle East. And maybe if we were living in Scandinavia, I would be able to find lots of rugs that I wanted to take back that was Scandi style. But with lamps and things, no, I just can't think of what I would buy. But hey, so Nikki, moving on to podcasts, movies and books, what podcasts have you been listening to?
Oh, well, a lot of podcasts, as you know, I'm an addict. So I was listening to a great podcast, which I would recommend to parents, but I'd also recommend tissues. It's called The Adoption, and it was a listener recommendation. So Rachel emailed us to our twofatexpats@gmail account and said, I really think you'd enjoy this podcast, and I listened to it. It follows an adoption in the British system of two small children who are taken into care because their parents are established not to be able to care for them. And it was recorded over a year, and the journalist that did it had unprecedented access to all parts of the process. So there's interviews with the birth mother, the birth father, the birth grandparents, social workers. They were in the adoption decision panel when they were having the meeting. And the adoptive parents.
How did they get? Because I know this is a BBC podcast. So how did
they? Yes, it is a BBC podcast.
How did they get that access? Like, Who grants that access? Like,
yeah, no, there are certain things. I would have no idea about the children, who they are or where they're living or their names, because right. they do things like change their names. And so obviously they couldn't record the whole thing, you know, and the parts are very, they're not redacted, but they're obviously specific parts of the hearing. But it's just to sort of understand the entire process.
Oh, my gosh.
Or process, depending what country you live in. Yeah. And it is a heart-wrenching story. So the birth mother has six children. The oldest lives with his father. Two live with their maternal grandparents, and a newborn was taken straight away for adoption. And the two that were left in the story were put into foster care and then the adoption program. And it's just, I can't even, there's 16 or 17 episodes. They're around 12 to 15 minutes each. So they're not too long. They're a little bit short for me, but because, you know, I always listen to when I'm walking to the supermarket or whatever. But that's fine. When I found out about it, it was nearly over, so I could just download the whole series and listen to a couple at a time. But I'd really recommend it, but definitely keep the tissues to hand. And it just is a fascinating look inside the process, just amazing.
Yeah.
The other one that I would recommend, and this is mainly if you're an Australian, but if you're an Australian expat, and I know there actually are quite a few Australians that listen to this, they're Guardian Australia and 2SER, which is a community radio station, have done a podcast series called Common Ground. And it's the Guardian editor, Leonore Taylor, and Rebecca Huntley, who is a social researcher. Mm-hmm. But we also know Rebecca Huntley from the Full Catastrophe podcast that we both enjoy listening to.
And the Daily Debrief.
And the Daily Debrief, yes. Yeah. So she spends a lot of her time speaking to Australians in their living rooms, like going around the country interviewing people about modern Australian social issues. Now, this podcast takes four people from different socioeconomic and age groups and backgrounds in Australia and discusses issues with them. And the four people are Sharon, Katrina, Josh, and Steve. And it is eye-opening, I would say, eye-opening, mind-blowing, bubble-bursting. It's amazing. They talk about there's four or five episodes. They talk about the inequality gap, same-sex marriage, euthanasia, and immigration. And if you want to know, if you're not Australian, you want to know what real Australians sound like and what the big political and social topical issues are in Australia at the moment, then you should listen to this podcast.
Oh, that sounds
highly recommend.
Good. That sounds good. I have seen that. Now, I said the Daily Debrief, but I reckon it was Debrief Daily. Can you remember that one with Rebecca Huntley and Sarah McDonald?
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, Rebecca Huntley is incredible. I've also heard her interviewed on Fidler, and she's I think she's actually Dr. Rebecca Huntley.
She may be. Yeah. She's very knowledgeable.
Yeah. Now, I don't have a new podcast per se, but I have been listening to Don't Shoot the Messenger. But I thought an interesting point on podcasts this week is, you know, the person I fangirl over the most, Carolyn Wilson, broke her own story on her own podcast this week when she announced that she was no longer going to be the chief football writer at The Age. And I just thought it was an interesting, newsworthy conversation in that she's a journalist working for a newspaper who is also on the medium of television and radio, but chose to break the story of her not being the chief football writer on her own podcast, which meant that when I listened to other people talk about it, they all prefaced her podcast. So on SEN yesterday, because that's very much a sporting station, and there were several people who talked about it, and they all used a grab of her podcast. I guess if you're going to use a grab, you've got to say where you've got the grab from. But I thought it was an interesting change. I'm not saying in any way that she did that for publicity, because I don't think Carolyn Wilson needs publicity. I think she probably did it because it was a safe place to do it, and that she could have an extended conversation about it. And it makes complete sense that you would do it on your own podcast now, right? Because that's the place where you talk about your life and your decisions and what's going on in your life. But
yeah,
isn't that interesting?
I thought it was interesting because she They released it also as a bonus episode. So it was a separate standalone thing that was just about her stepping down and what her plans are. I also thought it was unique in that it was definitely a conversation rather than an interview.
Yes.
So Corey sort of interjected her own thoughts and opinions and commentary.
Yes.
It wasn't a traditional interview in that you'd hear someone say, so Caroline, can you tell us, you know, how you came to this decision? And now can you tell us this? And now can you tell us that? It was very much a two-way.
Yeah.
It was very like their podcast, you know, it was just a two-way conversation where they talked about it.
Yeah,
it's just another thing. I know you're a big fangirl, but I and I'm putting together some little clips, some snippets of Kirsty fangirling. but I think it's just another way that they started their podcast, and I'm sure not necessarily with any intention, but I think this will bring a lot more attention to it and perhaps some more listenership, and it's something that they enjoy doing. So perhaps it will move, you know, something else will come out of this for their podcast as well. But it was a very clever step, and it was kind of part of her understanding her as a person more, I think.
Yes, and I think only because they are best friends, and only your best friend can say to you, and I don't know if you picked up on this, Nikki, I did think last year you were looking very tired, that it had been a long year, and I was thinking, my God, if anyone else said that to you, you'd punch them in the face. Like, what? But your friend can say that.
Yeah, but not only that, if you were a woman interviewing a woman on media in Australia and said that to them, there'd be uproar.
Yes. Yes.
If that was a regular interview and you were an interviewer, like if Lee Sales was interviewing Caroline Wilson, said, yeah, I think you've been looking bit tired this last year, Caro, when I saw you three times, you know, I think that there'd be uproar about that, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of a really new media way to do this kind of thing.
Yes. And I don't know if this is me being vindictive, but one of my favorite pieces of that conversation too was, you know, I've spoken before, Nikki, about how horrified I was years ago when Sam Newman on the football show brought out the mannequin and stapled her face to it.
Yeah.
And how sexist and abhorrent it was. And I think a lot of people at that time would have said that people like me were overreacting and that it was a joke and that it should have been taken in a lighthearted way. But I thought it was great that she said she could remember the first day of the job, that it was Sam Newman who rang her and said, well, I know what your first headline should be. It should be Caroline Wilson knows nothing about football. It showed you that it's been a persistent conversation in her life.
Yeah.
Do you know that these guys have done? And it's been interesting listening to the follow-up conversation on different sporting stations where they've talked about it, because, you know, a lot of men have found the need to say, you know, she's hated by many, she's the most hated woman in, you know, football and whatever. What I really did love was David Swartz yesterday said on his show that he can remember she wrote about him and his gambling problem, which he was really he was furious and ropeable about, that she had written it and he thought it was unfair and unjust at the time, and in reflection realized that her writing about that was what gave him the kick up the bum to realize he had a problem, because she writes the true stories. She doesn't write about, you know, how many push-ups were done at training or, you know, just about the game. She writes the human stories behind the game, which is how sport conversation is done now. Do you know, it never used to be. It used to be I remember my dad telling me that he used to be able to read a football story as a kid in the country, you know, a game that had gone on in the city, he could read the recap of the game and he would know exactly how the game went piece by piece by piece. I don't think that, you know, there's no necessity for that anymore, that style of writing. People get that. They can watch it on every medium possible, but they love to hear the background stories. That's why we love to see the Instagram of you know, sports people's lives and their follow their Facebook pages and whatever. We like to know what happens behind the scenes, I guess. So, but yes, I thought interesting for podcasting that that's the way it's going. You know, will people now break their stories themselves on their own podcasts, their own blogs, their own Facebook pages?
Absolutely. So reading, I imagine you've been reading.
I have just started A Man Called, and I was going to say Ove, but I've heard that that is not how it's pronounced. It's Over. It's a 2012 novel by Fredrik Backman, who is a Swedish columnist, blogger and writer, and it was published in English in 2013, and it is this month.
Is it a movie now,
yes,
too?
Yes, it is. And it is this month's book group for me. So I won't talk about it yet. I'll wait until we've had book group and then I'll talk about it some more there. But that is what I'm reading. If anyone wants to read along with our Two Fat Expats book group, it's A Man Called Over. What about you?
Well, I've been scrolling through my Audible and doing a bit of backlisting to my David Sedaris, which When You Are Engulfed in Flames, as read by David Sedaris.
Yes, so good. Yes. So good.
And I went to see him in Atlanta and he is just brilliant. Mm. And this book, When You're Engulfed in Flames, has got a bit about a visit to Australia, which is quite hilarious. He talks about going to Taronga Zoo. So really been enjoying that.
Yes.
So just an update on screen. So last time I talked about Poldark and I said I didn't really know where it was set, but where it was set, I can tell people, is in Cornwall. and that's where the beaches and the hill tops come from and the cliff tops. And it can be seen on the BBC, which I didn't say. But also been watching Catastrophe season 3 is on Amazon. Have you caught up on season 3?
I haven't done season 3 yet.
As awkward and uncomfortable and as ever,
yes.
But funny too. And the other thing that I have been watching on screens is there's a Facebook page called Listen to America, a HuffPost road trip. And it's Huffington Post in collaboration with other media outlets. And it's a series of things about, you know, road tripping across America. They're about 7 minutes each, which is excellent for our current attention span of watching things. And one of them was how Airbnb is pushing locals out of New Orleans neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
Another one was Does the Mormon Church have a role in the increased LGBTQ suicides in the community in Utah? And the one that got my attention, that got me in to watch and how I went in and searched and found other ones, was how the opioid crisis is overwhelming funeral homes in West Virginia.
Ooh.
So it's a 7 minute blitz about, it's great for short attention spans. It tells a story and it's beautifully produced and great topics. So yeah, I'd recommend that. I think there's a Facebook page. I'll put them in the notes, but
I love
this Facebook page and you can go and
Yeah, I loved a term for the opioid crisis. I'd love to hear about that because I'm amazed with how my children talk about now the use of Percocet and Endone and those sort of drugs. They know them as common terms, which
they know.
They know the names. You know, I noticed on the Don't Shoot the Messenger podcast the other day, Anna from the Op Shop used the term hillbilly heroin. Did you hear that?
Yes,
for those sort of drugs, but. Yeah, it is. It's very scary. I'd really be interested to watch that one because I think with our elderly in Australia, like the amount of those sort of drugs that are being handed out is scary canary.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things about that. I totally agree.
Mm. Have you ever had to have any of those drugs?
No, only when I've given birth I've had things like pethidine,
yes.
Which I think is an excellent drug.
Right.
in a controlled hospital environment, obviously. And it's where I first thought, oh, I could be a drug addict. So I had the first time I had a baby, I had it in Australia. The hospital left my epidural in and they gave me pethidine in through that for 48 hours. And they injected it and I could feel it. I could feel it go into my body and just spread out. And I could just feel like the pain going and the drifting and the, it was amazing. Yeah. It was really quite amazing. But certainly no endone and those kind of drugs. But my mum had a lot of those drugs towards the end of her life. And when she came to stay with us in the US, she, oxycodone, those kind of things, she had a suitcase full of them because she had to take them at various times. Yeah. And she, you know, had to have a doctor's letter to travel with them. And then we had to go one night when she was in a lot of pain and she had a new prescription. We had to go and find a drive-through pharmacy that would give us oxycodone. And believe me, it was quite a rigmarole to try and get it.
I bet.
It's a big deal. And it's another thing. So in Australia, my mum, she passed away in a private home. And she, so what the first thing they do is they come in and they take all those drugs away because obviously they're easily then in that situation. So the doctors and the nurses come in and say, okay, where are all the drugs? And you know, and they've been keeping a record of how many are in the home and because they don't want you to do anything bad with them, which I totally understand.
Yes, because people do.
So yeah, there's certainly a lot. Yeah. A lot to go on there. And it's in every TV show now. If you look at all the TV shows, US produced ones, there's this kind of thing, the whole, you know, painkiller to drug addict sort of storylines.
Yes. Yes. And to the point that our children see it in different shows and have different conversations. Yeah. And, you know, my son has plantar fasciitis at the moment and he keeps making jokes about because they've given him something for his foot. Now, they don't have strong painkillers in Qatar. Well, if they do, they're not handing them out. And he keeps making jokes about, you know, needing some Percocet. And that was when I first thought, why do you even know? How do you even know that Percocet exists? I'm a shocker with any of those things. I got given a couple of those sort of drugs when I was having chemo and I just don't do them well. They make me incredibly sick. So I can't be a drug addict. I'm not good with drugs. Now, I could be an alcoholic.
Yeah. I'm too scared to be a drug addict. I don't like to lose control that often.
Yes. Okay. I watched the most fantastic show when I was in Australia called The Letdown. And The Letdown is based on a woman who's just had her first baby and that first newborn experience of being at home. The first episode just really shows you how everybody's relationship changes around her, and it's just so identifiable on every level. She tries to go to a work do, you know, with her newborn, and it's a disaster. She goes to baby group, it's a disaster. It has Noni Hazelhurst as sort of the suburban baby group leader, we're not talking like a baby group where it's just a bunch of mums having coffee or mums and dads having coffee. It's one, you know, where it's organized by the local care nurse if I'd had a baby in Australia, I could probably tell you what that organization was called, but I can't. So it's just funny. It's on ABC iView. It's called The Letdown. So I would highly recommend it. The other one that I've enjoyed on Australian TV is Sisters, which has just started on Aussie TV. It's about a doctor who runs an IVF clinic, and it comes out that during the 80s he actually donated his own sperm to many of the people. It focuses on the three sisters out of the hundreds of babies he had. For some reason he had a lot of male babies, but just the three girls. So there's the daughter that grew up in the house with him as an only child and how she's dealing with it. It's the other daughter who is actually a friend of hers because the mums were friends, and who is a successful lawyer. And then on the other sister is a television, sort of children's television personality. And it's cute. It's really funny. And, you know, it's just that same sort of safe Aussie TV. Do you know that you could watch an episode with your kids and there's nothing too risque? And I did like that there's a lesbian lead, which I've noticed is becoming more visible on Australian screens. That wouldn't have happened 10 years ago.
No.
And then for movies, I did a couple of plane movies. I watched one called Trackdown, which was a long-distance runner. Who, it's really quirky. She kind of twists her ankle.
Go straight to plane?
Yeah. I wonder. She's doing Olympic trials, and it's quirky enough that you're like, what is going to be the story here? Like, because I'm struggling for the story, but I think it may have put me to sleep because I can't remember what happened at the end. So
that's a not recommend for Christmas flying. Not recommend.
Trackdown. The other one was The Circle, which is the Emma Watson, Tom Hanks one, which kind of looks either that it may be based on Google or Apple or could be on either of those, where she gets the internship at the tech company. And just sort of looking at the speed of how they work, and it does feel kind of creepy because it feels quite feasible all the way through. Covers all the icky stuff that we're feeling about the manipulation of social media and the online world, down to even her job title is she's the customer experience person. But it kind of looks at how burnt out all these kids get, which, and I've just called them kids to make myself feel 110, but they are young. Do you know, everybody's young apart from the guy who creates, you know, so it did feel very Google and Apple. I loved The Big Sick. Have you seen that? That's the one with the Pakistan border.
Yeah.
And that I think may even have, you know, well, it definitely wouldn't be on at the movies anymore, I don't think, because it's been around for a while. But it's the Pakistan-born comedian, Kumail, who marries the grad student. Oh, I don't know, actually. I don't think I've given anything away there. It isn't about their marriage, but it's about the getting together, Emily Gardner. It's fabulous. So very quick premise is comedian meets girl, but he is from a strict Muslim family who are consistently trying to set him up with a Muslim arranged marriage, but he falls in love with someone else, Emily Gardner, who then ends up in a coma. And it's all about sort of the relationship that forms with her parents while they're there trying to look after her and how it all sort of unfolds. It's got Ray Romano from, you know, Everyone Loves Raymond, and Holly Hunter, and it's good. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Excellent. We've had a lot of time for listening and watching in between drinks. Yes.
Now, did we have any iTunes reviews?
We did have a new iTunes review. We had a fantastic review from Angela, which was I think you shared in the group. And Angela thinks it's like having two new girlfriends in your life that always have something interesting to talk about. So there you go.
Oh, nice.
Do you feel interesting? Nice.
Yes. And you said there was a SpeakPipe message as well.
There was a SpeakPipe message, which SpeakPipe, of course, is our lovely where you can send us a voicemail. You just go to the twofatexpats.com website, and on the side it says, say hello, send us a message with a little microphone. You click on that and you can tell us whatever you think. And our message was from Megan in Brunei. Do you want to listen to it?
Yes.
Hello, this is Megan. I'm an American living in Brunei for only 2 weeks now after living for almost 8 years in China. And I'm catching up on this season's episodes while unpacking our shipment. And I had to just call and own the American stereotype. I was listening to episode 3 where you kind of recapped the Aussies, the Brits, and the Americans. And not only had I typed a message within the previous 5 minutes using awesome twice, but I had also been wondering in my new compound, I've met lots of Aussies, several Brits, and have even asked someone, oh, do you guys have any like WhatsApp groups or chat groups or things to kind of stay organized among yourselves or communicate things? And you're like, no, we don't. That's a good idea. Or what about like meetups within the compound for newcomers? Or you guys have anything like that? No. So my brain has been going crazy thinking, I need to organize this. Like, I wonder why someone hasn't organized this. So I literally giggled out loud when I heard y'all say that the Americans, that's what we do. We organize. So love the podcast. Thanks for doing all that you do. I love the Facebook group. And I know myself and so many others really benefit from the efforts that you ladies put into making this happen. So thanks from a Texan living in Brunei.
The thing I loved about Megan is that, or Megan.
It is Megan. It is.
But the thing I loved about her, and I loved that she said, you know, that she identified as one of the organized Americans, is I worried so much in that episode that we may have offended Gio, that we were sort of teetering on the edge of being offensive. So I love, thank you, Megan, that you didn't find it offensive and that you took it in the nature of which it was meant to be.
Intended.
But yeah.
You owned it.
Yes, that's it. I just loved it. And I love the idea that someone's listening to us while they're unpacking their boxes. I mean, that is the ultimate expat experience, isn't it?
Totes. Totally is. And yeah, I that's something I really loved about it too. And the fact that she's organizing. So now she'll have to tell us what all her WhatsApp groups are and what she's organized.
Okay, Nikki, that's our time up for this week. That's episode 9. We'll be back next week with episode 10. And I'll talk to you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.